You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Terminal. Now, I'm going to make an attempt at this today. I've had this thing kind of stirring around in my head for a very long time, and when I talk to people, I try to explain this, and so this may happen for all of us together. Well, one of the perplexities to me, and if you ride buses, you know, if you have to ride a bus someplace, and people say, oh, well, nobody rides a bus, go down to the bus terminal sometime and see how many people are getting on a bus, or a train station, we usually call it. There's a terminal and a station, but there's something about airplanes, and there's something that's very disturbing to me that we call them airport terminals. I just don't like the idea of the word terminal associated with a place you go to get on a plane. Seems like that would be a problem. But this whole concept of a terminal, and then what I think of, I mean, terminal can have some electronic meanings. It can go a lot of different places. But terminal to me is either where you get on a plane or something that you are. And before we're done, this is not to be morbid, but we are all terminal. Whether you know it or not, or you like it or not, or want to think about it or not, you are terminal. And as we'll look today, you are terminal in a terminal. Now, the way that my brain works, it's like the whole planet is a terminal. And it's not about staying here. You were born into a terminal. This is a holding place. This is a place where you're going to be for a little while, and it is about going somewhere else. Now, if you're not going from here to a very good place, then the terminal better be as nice as possible, because it's about all you got going for you. Because the next stop, and by the way, everybody's got a one-way ticket out of here. Now, I don't know where your ticket's taking you, and that can be changed while you're in the terminal. And part of, you know, obviously what a lot of the church is about and this whole Jesus thing about is helping people in the terminal on the planet make sure that when they depart from here, they are going to the right place, to the best place. Now, here's what happens in my estimation from my observation. You know, if you're in a hurry, I've packed my bags. Most people are rushed going to the airport. And once you have small children and you try to get rushed and go to the airport with them, you learn very quickly you don't do that. We tried it a few times. You know, you literally grab a baby, you know, deal and just haul off to the airport. But you had another kid, two kids. You're going to have to get there early or you're not making it anymore, especially with all the security checks. You're going to have to be early. But there's something in our brains that you say, okay, I've got to do this. You know, it's better than driving 20 hours where I want to go. So I'm willing to go through whatever I have to, but I'm going to the terminal to get on a plane to get out of there. It's not about staying. And so you get in there and then you find out, I remember recently this happened to us a number of times, you get in there and there's a storm, the place you're going or somewhere, and they come on and say, you know, the thing flashes over the gate and it says, well, this flight won't depart for another hour, another 2 hours, another 5 hours. I've been stuck in airports sleeping in armchairs. How many of you have had to sleep overnight in an airport? I'd like to see some hands on this. Some airports have hotels. And you go down, and one of them, I think in Miami, I've been through there, and you go down, and the hotel lobby is literally in the terminal. You check in, take an elevator up, you got your room. Now, here's where it goes wrong. If all of a sudden you're in the airport, and you're in the terminal, and your desire was to go someplace, and you find yourself in a hotel room going, you know, this is kind of nice. I think I'll just stay here. And you get the mindset, not that I'm going to accomplish something while I'm here and then leave. You've forgotten that you even went to go. And now you say, well, let's start a business in the terminal. Let's just live in the terminal and make the whole thing about staying here, forgetting completely about going anywhere else. There was a guy, he's an Iranian gentleman, and maybe you know this story. There were movies, not necessarily about this, but I think they had something to do with it. It was a movie called The Terminal, Tom Hanks. I think Spielberg made it. Guy who was stuck in the duty-free area. You think, well, that was just a fictional thing. There was a guy, an Iranian man, they end up calling Sir Alfred Mehran, who lived in the departure lounge of Terminal 1 in Charles de Gaulle Airport. Now listen to this. He lived in the departure lounge from August the 8th, 1988, until August 2006. He lived in the terminal. And he would get up early from his little spot where he had staked out, and he would bathe in the bathroom before anybody started coming and going. And you can read about him, do some research and find out. He was trapped. He was a refugee, and one country wouldn't take him, and he couldn't go there, and he'd fly someplace and come back, and they say, well, no, and he literally just got left and eventually had to go to the hospital because of some deal and got out of the terminal. Which you say, well, what a disaster. How does somebody get stuck there for that many years? And that's kind of what I'm asking us today. What happened to us? What happened to this great trip we were on? What happened to the hope of heaven? Realizing that we are terminal. We are the terminal. And so we know we're going to die. A buddy of mine, his dad just a few days ago died, and he was buried yesterday, and my wife and I went to the funeral, drove to Oklahoma to go to this funeral. And last week, I called this gentleman. He had cancer. He was told he had maybe 2 weeks, and then it went to like 72 hours or something. And I didn't know him really well, but I knew him well enough to call him. And I got him on the phone, and he was lucid. He was fine. He was in his right mind and could talk. And I told him, part of my conversation, I said, you know, I know I'm supposed to be kind of sorry for you, but I said, honestly, I got to tell you that I'm just a little bit jealous. Because there is something about talking to someone who actually is aware that they are going to die. You say, well, we're all aware of that. I don't think so. You say, well, you want us to be morbid. No, that's not what I'm saying. But if I went down, I said, you know what, I don't know how to know this, and it's a spooky thing, but I'm going to go through the crowd, and there's someone here today, you'll be dead within 72 hours, and I could pinpoint you. And if I actually could look you in the eyes and say, it's the deal, and I could get you to a hospital this afternoon, the doctor go, you know what, you got full-blown cancer, you'll be dead in 72 hours, he's right. All of a sudden, everything that mattered really doesn't matter as much anymore. And all the stuff that you had planned goes out the window. And you know what it gets down to? It gets down to a few conversations. And you start asking really bottom line questions. And stuff that you needed to say to your daddy, you figure out a way to say to your daddy. And stuff that you and your wife, if you're married, had not resolved, you figure out a way to resolve it. Because you're going to die. Because your plane is leaving. They've called your flight, and it's pretty known. See, the problem with us is that we kind of know we're dying, but we don't believe it. And so we postpone it, and they call the flight and say, oh, we'll catch the next one. No urgency. We're not even here to catch flights anymore. We're not here to get out of here. We're just here to stay. This is a great place. And there should be this kind of tension every day. In fact, I've got to read some Bible verses eventually. Let's try that. I wanted to end with this, but let's start with this. Philippians chapter 1. Now, I'm not claiming to have gotten this in my head. I've said to people for years, and I don't even know that I get it, but I believe this. I don't think you ever really live until you believe you could really die. And some of you had near-death experiences, and I've almost died of a sickness, and you think, well, you get it. Then I say, you know what? I don't really think I get it, because I'm just still kind of coasting a little bit. There's not this urgency. There's not this could be the day. This could be my last day. Jesus could come back, or something could happen to me. You say, but though you're being morbid again. No, I'm just being realistic. People die every day. Your number could get pulled. What are you doing if this is all you got? And you're living like, well, I'll do that tomorrow. You know what? You don't get tomorrow. And sufficient for today, the book says, are the evils thereof. Do it today if you can. Philippians chapter 1, and I'm going to read a little bit of this just so we'll get some context. Let's start with verse 19. And by the way, Paul's terminal when he's writing this is a prison, is a jail. He's locked up because he just won't get off of it. For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and hope that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. He's like, I don't care. As long as Jesus is glorified, if I live, that's great. If I die, if he's glorified, I'm okay with that. And then this famous verse 21, "For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. If I'm alive, the only reason I'm in the terminal that I'm still here is Christ. If I die, that's even better." Now, is he morbid? Is he suicidal? No, he just gets it. If God loves us so much that Jesus had to come to earth, born of a virgin, live a sinless life, die on a cross, be buried and raised from the dead, and it's all to save us from our sins and to get us into heaven with him forever one day, what the heck are we doing here? Why would he go to all that trouble and then leave us? Why has my flight not been called yet? Get me out of here, for God's sake. Why would God do this to any of us? The pain, the suffering, the problems, the stress. We're stuck here. No one will call our flight. We ought to wake up every day going, "Oh gosh, I'm here again. Okay, I'll make the best of it. But God, come get me tomorrow or maybe this afternoon." You say, "Well, you're nuts. Nobody thinks that." Exactly. Why not? I'm having a big time. Well, we got Starbucks in my terminal. We got food. We got nice looking people. We can just sit and people watch for a few years if that's all. I'm having fun in the terminal. What happened to your trip? And I ought to be waking up going, "Okay, all right, God, I'm okay. I can do this one more day with you, but this better be worth it. You better have a reason for leaving me down here without heaven, without seeing you personally. I'll do it one more day. But you better have a reason." And the truth is, he does. He has a reason. I would not be standing here one more time if Jesus didn't have a reason for leaving me. Either it's something I've got to learn before I see him, or it's something he wants to do in me and through me before he gets me out of here. Now the question is, what are you doing with that opportunity? Are you going to blow one more day distracted, chasing some worldly thing? Or are you going to say, "Okay, God, I'm here. What's this about? Keep my eyes and ears open. There may be one more person. My job's done, and I'm out of here." Verse 21 again, Philippians chapter 1. "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." And then verse 22. "But if I live on in the flesh," but let's just say I don't die, which is, looks like is what's happening. "But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor, yet what I shall choose I cannot tell, for I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better." Let me ask you a question. If I gave you the option to get out of here today, right now, and be with Jesus in the next 10 minutes, would you say, "Hey, I'm in"? And I've asked this before. I'm trying to get us to where that is really the deal. I need volunteers to go to heaven right now. I need 20 volunteers. Is anybody in? And we hesitate. "Oh my gosh, you know, I got stuff to do Tuesday. I got plans. You know, come back through and see how I'm doing Wednesday. I'm too busy to go to heaven." And here you got a guy like Paul. You say, "Well, he was just some religious bumpkin." He was a monster, a religious. He had a brain. He had skills. He had authority. He gave everything up to follow Christ. And finally gotten it down, and why we respect him so much, is that he got it down for me to live is Christ, to die is gain, and he's talking about this kind of stuff. "I'm hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. And being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith, that your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ by my coming to you again. I'd like to get out of here, but if it's doing something to serve other people and what God has for me to do, I'll stay." Go to Psalm chapter 119. We'll go backwards and then go left to right. And I'm going to cite some verses that give you, you know, realize it's not something I'm just dreaming up. There's something to this. Psalm 119, verse 17 and following. The psalmist here says, "Deal bountifully with your servant that I may live and keep your word. Open my eyes that I may see wondrous things from your law." And then this phrase in verse 19, "I am a stranger in the earth. Do not hide your commandments from me." There ought to be some kind of feeling where I wake up in America even and say, "You know what? I'm American, but I'm not from here anymore. This isn't my home." You remember that old hymn? I printed it out. "This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. Oh, Lord, you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then, Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. They're all expecting me, and that's one thing I know. My Savior pardoned me, and now I onward go. I know he'll take me through, though I am weak and poor. Another verse. Just up in glory land we'll live eternally. The saints on every hand are shouting victory. Their song of sweetest praise drifts back from heaven's shore, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. You say, oh, you're just reading old hymns, and we're going to cry a minute. And you know, we're just going back to our own lives. It ain't going to do anything. Because life kicks back in, and we're just going to do what we've always done. And why is that? Is it possible that you sit through a message or some deal like this and you go, you know what? No, I'm not going to go back and do this anymore. I'm not going to go just be busy to be busy, do something just to say I'm doing something. If I'm going to be here, for me to live is going to be Christ. To die would be gain. And see, if you're really living that way, somebody's going to pick up on that and say, you know, you're not from here, are you? No. You don't live here in the terminal like us, do you? No. I'm going to do some good while I'm here, but any minute they're going to call my flight and I'm out of here. Now, I know a way to get you on my flight if you're interested. Well, where are you going? Well, I got this friend named Jesus who's built us a place. And as soon as my house is finished, I'm out of here. But until it's finished, I'm here. And I'll tell you about my friend, and I'll tell you about this place, and I'll tell you what'll make being stuck here in this terminal a whole lot easier, because you'll have something to do while you're here that makes a difference, not just here, but forever. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews gives this list. Chapter 11 gives these lists, all these people who live by faith. So these are people that lived before Jesus came, looking forward to him coming, but never actually, they weren't here when it happened. Hebrews 11, verse 13, he talks about all these people. The writer says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And in 1 Peter chapter 1, I won't read the whole chapter here, but, you know, this book, a lot of the book, if not most of the book, is written to people who are in the family, who are either Old Testament believers or New Testament believers. So you say, well, some of this doesn't make sense. It's not going to make sense until you're in this family and you read it and say, okay, this is written to our specific new nation of people and helping us understand what we're supposed to be doing while we're here. He says, verse 13, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not conform yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance. But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. For if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay, or you may have the word pilgrimage or something in your translation, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. That's just like being, oh, terrified, fear. No, it's a reverent kind of the word phobos. It's where we get our word phobia. But he says, while you're here, during the time of your stay, let it be done in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as a lamb without blemish or without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifested in these last times for you, who through him believed in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. There should be a sense of, if I'm here one more day, then Father, I'm going to spend this day, I'm going to live a holy life, that's what you told me to do. There needs to be some fear, some reverence, some awe, some awareness that this is not just about me, that God is up to something. I can't live my old ways. There's a new life at stake here, and it's not just about me, it's about impacting other people in the process. Now see, let's go back to the terminal. If I have a layover, or if I have a delayed flight, if you don't have a good attitude, you're going to sit there sulking and complaining the entire time you wait for that period of time, right? But if you have a good attitude and you say, you know what, God, my flight was delayed. My flight was delayed for a reason. Who is it stuck in this terminal with me that instead of being all about me and woe is me and where are we getting our next smoothie so we can smooth over the time, I actually look around and say, okay, God, I'm fine with this. If I'm here, I'm here. Why am I here? And then you start looking around. You sit by someone and say, how are you doing? Your flight delayed too? You say, oh, we were just chatting it up, being nice. No, I'm trying to make the best of why I'm there. And before it's all over, you talk to the person, you share your faith, their whole life's changed, and all of a sudden you go, well, wow, what if I hadn't been stuck in the airport? That would never have happened. Then make the most of your stay here by not focusing just on you and your convenience and your little life and your little problems, and look beyond you to somewhere else and talk to somebody else and share not even your life, his life in you with somebody else. You say, well, I'm too busy for that. And good for you, Richard. You're a preacher. That's your job. We pay you to do that. You know what? You can't pay me to do that because you're not with me in the terminal when I'm complaining just like you. And get frustrated with myself and ask myself, what is wrong with this picture? Just a few pages later, 1 Peter 2:11, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, these are not settlers, these are people passing through, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against your soul. Now, I want to be careful even saying this out loud because I don't want to say something and it happened to me. Why is it that I know that I might live longer, and you say, well, but you figured out a way not to live longer. I might live longer if I took better care of my body, what fuel I put in, whether I exercise this body or not, what condition I'll be in when my wife has to take care of me when I'm an old man, because women always outlive men, it seems. Part of the curse, I guess. Now see, if I was standing up here speaking and I had pain in my heart, my right side went limp, and I went to a doctor and he said, oh, you had a slight heart attack, and if you don't do these certain things, you will die. And I went, oh my gosh, I'm all alarmed, and okay, we're going to go to the gym and do all this therapy and because I want to live. Why do I have to be threatened with death to live? So the devil gets us all fooled. He says, oh, no, you're not going to die. That happens to other people. Take your time. Pace yourself. Tell you what you do. Make a bunch of money. Then when later, you'll be in a position to be a blessing to lots of people. So consume your whole life with business, chasing the money, so that then you will be able to bless people down the road. That's a good plan. Oh, that's a good plan.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there on the Talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
If I could go row by row, seat by seat, and say, your terminal, your terminal, your terminal, your terminal, your terminal, you're going to die, and scare you, I'd figure out a way to do it. Because before the day was over, everything would fall away. You'd make some drives, you'd make some calls, you'd sit down, you'd grab somebody by the cheek and say, I am so sorry. We have so many days left. Let's make the best of it. See, you're going to be bitter for another 10 or 20 years because you think you've got another 10 or 20 years to be bitter. You're going to be unforgiving and hateful
Some wives will continue to withhold sex from their husbands just to hurt them. I'm going to get you. And the old coot has a heart attack and dies, and you don't have to withhold anything because he's gone now. Your prayers have been answered. See, we just don't think it's going to happen, so we just live like it isn't going to happen. It's almost a blessing to discover you're going to die, because you might actually start living in the terminal.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.